You're listening to Tech Trend Investments with Elizabeth Powell and Joseph Grassa, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Hi, everyone. Hello. Happy Tuesday. Today is my official Matcha Tuesday. Okay, I'm having matcha today. I gave in. I can't help it. I like it. It has good health benefits. So happy Matcha Tuesday. Plus, Thai tea wasn't around me locally, so I'm having matcha. But it's still good. Still one of my favorites. I just had to put it out there. You know.
We love matcha. So, green.
I don't want to talk about food because then I'll be hungry because I really didn't eat today. It's like, this is Elizabeth Powell on matcha. Bing, 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 bing. Without food. Hey, we have a super exciting show today. Woo! Okay, so we have a super exciting show. You know, we always have a super exciting show, but it's, you know, we have to have that matcha so that we can tell you all the good things that are going on. And go ETH! Oh,
go ETH!
Go ETH! I didn't check the price right before we went on. What are we at? Like over
21.10 right now.
Woo! Yay! Go ETH. So like even when everything is going on in the world, go ETH, right?
Yep.
Remember, first off, I just want to tell y'all, remember that it's a digital asset, and no matter what time of the day it is, you have access to it pretty much. Doing research, not financial advice. So that's one reason why it's great. Two, people are always trading on it.
Right.
Three, long-term hold, doing research, not financial advice, but go ETH. So we are on a Tuesday. Markets would have closed at like 1 o'clock today, and ETH has had a bounce today. Yay, it had a bounce this morning, actually.
Yep.
Yes, and so I'm going to give you a couple numbers, and I'm going to give you some more numbers as we progress on the show, but I just want you to get all excited here. We broke the 21. Breaking the 21 is significant, number one. The next one that we're going to do is 2150. Did we break 2150 today?
We came.
I didn't check the chart.
We came extremely close. We topped out today at 2124.
Okay, great. So 2150 is our next push. Then 2199. Then 2250. Then if we break 2250, it's on its next leg up because that's like one of our big resistance. But we break 2250, it's on its next leg from there on out. And the reason why we say this is, people are creature of habits, right? And so we can see what range that ETH has been going in. And for over a month, it's a bigger range, but we haven't gone below 1950, I don't think, in the last week or so. But over the month, we have a big range working. We have it from 1835, like that's the ultimate bottom. We haven't even come close to it yet. Knock on wood, do your research, not financial advice. But like the top of our range, we were at, to look at my little fun thing. I've maxed out one of my phones on memory. So I'm becoming dependent on one phone. I'm becoming a normal person again. But like 2199 is that one key number that keeps tapping and coming back. And if it pushes through that and then goes to the 2250, it's on its next leg up. Then we're in that 2300 range. And again, what I'm saying this is, people are creatures of habit, right? So if you normally trade, or your institution or anybody, you know what the range is. And so you set your stop losses and you set your limit orders within that range. And soon as it taps it, like they'll have a buy signal when it goes to a certain level, and then they'll have a sell signal when it goes to a certain level to take profit. And they, since people are creatures of habit, they do it on even numbers. Like they do it at 2100, 2150, 2200. So when you see it go 2199, all of them are taking profit at that sell signal, right at that tap, and then it pulls back. And it happens everywhere. It's not just in ETH, it's in BTC, it's in SOL, it's in BNB, stocks, bonds, options, future. People tend to go like even numbers, and they do it. Like they don't set it in they set familiarity all the time, the same thing over and over again. And if you talk to a trader or an advanced trader or somebody who does options or futures and ask them where they set their limits at, I bet you $1 million. Again, do your research, not financial advice. Take a shot. That they have their numbers set the same all the time. Yep. They'll like either set it plus or minus in their range every single time, exactly the same, or they'll have their numbers that they set it, or they'll evaluate the chart and they'll set it within that. And you can see it repeat itself over and over again. And right now we're at 2110. So our next push through is 2150, because that will be like the number that magically everyone sets, they profit take, and it comes back down a tiny bit. And then it pushes through that and goes on to the next leg up, because now they've broadened their range. And I know I'm talking about trading, but this is one of the reasons why we can see what the market does, because we see what traders do and we see where people set their limits, and everyone's a creature of habit and they're human and that's what they do. And even if they have bots that are trading, they still put the same numbers in. So you have a human inputting the information. If the bot was smart or the human was smart, they would do it like a little tiny before. So that's why you hear that 2199. Or a little bit before is the 2147, or a little bit before 2247. So it's that like little tiny before the mass like has their point.
Right.
So now that I've confused all of you, like I can see the chart flowing and what numbers it hits and target. And if you're a trader, you know what I'm talking about. If you're just listening for the fun of it and driving home, you're like, what is she talking about? But our targets. So this is why I like to educate. I like to tell you all like why I say something and then the background behind it, so I can educate you a little bit so you can get an understanding. So next time we talk about it, you're like, oh yeah, that's why, because she had talked about that on the show before.
Exactly.
So numbers, targets, here we go. Woo! So if we're sitting at 2110, woo! We're sitting at 2110. I'm going to give more numbers later on targets later on, but I'm going to give you the smaller range right now. So 2110, then 2150 is our next one, and people will put it like at 2147. But it's a soft resistance. It's not like a hard resistance, because we've hit 2199 before, so it's going to push through to 2199 potentially once it goes through there. And then 2199 is like a medium hard resistance, but when there's optimism, it will push through that. And again, we're staying in our range. Our range, we're still within our range, even though you may see fluctuations up and down, and it's moving like in 50 increments right now. Like the last day or so, we've moved in like 100 increments, but we're moving in that range. And so if you're a range trader, you have a potential to make good money, because you buy at the bottom and you sell at the top, and you buy at the bottom and you sell at the top. And if you're a normal person who doesn't know how to trade, you do the opposite. You buy at the top and you sell at the bottom. Buy at the top and sell. That's why we're here, to educate you and get you excited and understand, so you know why something does the way it, you know, like why it does what it does.
Right.
So targets. 2147 is a soft target. That means it could push through that. It's not like a hard resistance. So it could push through that. 2199 is the next one. And then above that is the 2247. That's a key one, right? When we push through 2247, it will take us on the next leg up. If we're still in this range and we're in a tight range, we're always in a tight range until a breakout. A breakout means that it's like going up and down, up and down, up and down, then it shoots straight up, and we'll see a breakout. And we usually see a small breakout right before a big breakout 24 to 48 hours in advance. So if you notice the chart the last week or two, we had all of a sudden, like we had a dip, like out of the blue, a dip out of nowhere. There was no news, nothing going on. And then 2 days, like 1 to 2 days later, we had a pullback in the market. And then another time we had a spike, like out of the blue, nowhere. There was like no news, nothing to instigate it to move that way. And then 1 to 2 days later, we had a rally in the market.
Right.
So we're seeing precursors on the chart, and then before news comes out, hint, hint. So 2147 is our soft target. 2199 is a little firmer target. We break through that to the 2247, and then we're out of this smaller range and we break out to the next upper range. Now, what motivates a market, what gets us going, is optimism, good news, positive, something comes out in the market, something that motivates it. What's been moving crypto has been unemployment. So if unemployment goes up, there's a potential for a Fed rate cut. CPI, if CPI of inflation goes down, there's a potential for a rate cut. We have some big things happening in May and in June. So we have the Fed meeting again in May. I think it's May or April.
May.
You
It's in
pulled it
May.
up for me. Okay, but Powell is also ending his term as Federal Reserve. So there's a board, and then there's like the key leader, the chairman, who's been Powell for the last, I think, 4 years, has it been?
Think
And
it's
so
become four.
he, yeah, I have to look up his history, but he's ending his term in May. And so there was a potential for a new Fed to come in, a new chair to come in, which may lean on the favoritism of a potential rate cut. Now, the reason why they cut rates or they raise rates or they keep rates steady is they're trying to keep an even line, like an right down the middle, right? So think of it this way. We'll do an analogy of rates to like a temperature in your house. So say you're comfortable with 70 degrees. Like 70 degrees is like your comfort zone. That's where when it's 70 in your house, you feel good. If it's 70 outside, it feels good. It's like a medium range, right? If the temperature rises to 72, 75, it gets a little hotter, so it becomes a little bit more uncomfortable. And then if it gets a little bit colder, if it's like 70 and it goes down to like 68 or 66 or 65, it gets cooler. So you try and bring the temperature back to the 70, like right at the middle. That's the same thing with interest rates. When we have inflation like is going up a little bit. So they'll raise rates to discourage people from spending money, which increases inflation. And that's why they raise the rates when inflation is going up. So that's like that 75 degree weather. And so they'll raise the rates to bring it back to center down to the 70. Now, if we're going into a recession, which means people aren't spending money, the cost of goods are cheaper, labor is cheaper, there's a lot of jobs, but not enough people to fill it. So then we need to encourage people to go out and spend money and to hire more people and produce more goods and have people buy more goods and services. Then they'll cut the rates. So they'll make the cost of money cheaper so that people can go out and afford to spend more. They'll cut rates. That's when the temperature's like at 66. And when they do that, people spend more money and we go back towards the center line. So that's why there's rate cuts, and then that's why there's rate hikes, is they're trying to keep it in the center. And so Powell's been trying to keep us lined in the middle, but he also has to think of like what's going on right now, what's happened in the last 2 to 3 months, what could potentially happen in the future, a cause and effect of what's going on now or what's happened in the past. And then based on historical events, what he predicts will think will happen in the future, because if A, B, and happens, then C will happen. If X, Y happens, then Z will happen, right?
Right.
So that's why the rate cuts. Now, when they cut rates, then it puts a rally in the market, because then they know people are going to spend money, which means it is going to make the economy more robust, and it's going to open up more potentials for more jobs, and it's going to get more money, people spending money, which means the businesses are going to make more money. So they're optimistic. So when there's a rate cut, the markets tend to rally and they go up. That's what they're hoping for, right?
Right.
Now, when we have higher cost of fuel, then potentially that means that transportation is going to cost more. It means that the goods will cost more because they have to tack on the extra costs that they incurred from transporting the goods. It means that other things will go up a little bit in price too. So they try and keep fuel costs at an equilibrium too. And if we get a bigger supply of fuel in the future, that means we have a potential to have our fuel costs go down in the future. And yes, maybe temporarily we may have a higher cost right now, but then you have to look in the future. If we obtain more fuel, like we obtain fuel from Venezuela and other sources, then the fuel costs will go down in the future. But right now, the fuel costs go up in uncertainty. When we go through different things in the world and we have uncertainty and people don't know what's going to happen, so they raise the cost to prepare themselves just in case. But then if you look long term and things go in our favor, then the cost goes actually down. So you have to build all of these different factors in when you're coming up with, do we heat up the economy? Do we slow down the economy? Do we raise rates? Do we cut rates? Should the market rally? Should the market pull back? And when we have this going on, it's uncertainty. So everyone calls it uncertainty. When you have uncertainty, that means that everything is range trading. It's going up and down and up and down based on emotion and based on news and what they think is going to happen. It happens in the stock market. They range in the stock market. It goes up and down on uncertainty. It happens in crypto. It goes up and down based on uncertainty. It happens with interest rates. They fluctuate. It happens with fuel costs. It fluctuates up and down based on uncertainty. So they haven't officially got the spike in the costs. The barrels of oil will go up in price, and then it'll have that trickle effect where then potentially the gas will go up. But they raise the prices before it actually happens in anticipation that it potentially could. Now, if their cost of goods don't go up, they made a bigger profit. So hypothetically, if you're going to sell me a widget, if y'all have been in business before, say I'm the retailer and I sell widgets and my widgets are $10 each.
Okay.
And you're going to sell me a widget, but I have a supply of 10 widgets in my back room. So I bought them at a cheaper price and you're going to sell me a widget, but you're going to raise the price because you think the cost is going to go up. So you're going to hike the price up now and you're going to sell me. Normally I bought all these widgets for $1 and now you're going to sell it to me for $1.20 because you think potentially the price will go up. So you sell it to me for $1.20. Now my cost has gone up, but your cost hasn't gone up yet because you haven't incurred the premium on the price yet. So you made that extra 20 cent profit because you think that the price will go up.
Right.
So you sell me the widget for $1.20, but now I'm the retailer, so now I've incurred that cost, but you made the extra profit on the 20 cents because you were the supplier, and you raised the price in anticipation anticipation of you thinking the price was going to go up. So now I have my 10 widgets at $1, and I have my one widget at $1.20. Now, if I cost average all of them, I'm probably at like $1.02 on all now, because right. I have a one at $1.20 and I have 10 at $1. So now my cost is $1.01. But since you charged me more for that one, I'm going to raise the price of all my widgets. And now I'm going to sell them. I was selling them for $5. I'm going to sell them for $6 because mm-hmm. I'm going to like five times multiply what your one cost. And since I have all my other ones at a discount, now I have a profit on my 10. But my one is like at the normal cost.
Right.
So that's kind of like what's happening on the supply chain right now is people anticipate that the prices will go up. Then they raise the prices in anticipation. Then it goes to the next person and they raise the prices in anticipation. But a lot of people are sitting on their reserves or their supply at the lower cost. But they sell their reserves and their supply at the higher cost because they can, because they raise the prices everywhere else. And so they have extra profit on the other one while they're going through these cycles. So that's kind of what's playing out right now. Now, if everything falls in place and everything, you know, works for the better and the prices go down on the cost of goods and the prices go down on oil and the price goes down on gas, you have all these at a lower cost now. But sometimes they keep the price inflated because now they have a bigger profit margin to do that in.
Exactly.
So you'll have to like see a cycle of economics and understand that like when it's a rumor, everybody acts on the rumor. And then when it finally hits everything, they have this extra supply chain that they've kept as their reserve. And then they're making an extra profit on those widgets. And then as things adjust and come back to like center again, then the prices are supposed to go down again, but they're quick to raise them and then they're slow to move them back down at a lower cost because all of their competitors raised it too. So now they're able to keep it at elevated costs until it adjusts.
Right.
So
it's the trickle
here's
effect.
My 101 economics, do your own research, not financial advice, but that's built into the pricing if interest rates are going to come up or down. Because if they raise interest rates, that means that people won't spend as much money. It should try and hedge inflation. It should make the cost of goods go down because now demand will go down because it's too expensive for somebody to buy it because the cost of money is too expensive and the goods too expensive. So people stop spending money. And so when they stop spending money, the retailers and the suppliers have to lower their prices so that people will buy again. And when they lower their prices, prices come down, demand goes up, and then they start to sell their supply. So
to us, that seems simple. To us, that seems very, very simple considering everything that we've been through and all the data we've collected. We see it happen in every market now too, right? It's not just widgets. It happens in every single market. So it's the trickle effect, right? It's in simple terms, it's a waterfall. If it affects the top layer, it's gonna fall all the way down the waterfall till it gets to the consumer at the bottom. So everyone's gonna feel it, but everyone's gonna feel it at different levels. And the people at the top have that stockpile, so they have the stockpile, so they're ready to sell those widgets at a higher price and make more profits on it, so they can keep buying and buying and buying.
Yeah. So I'm explaining like how the cost of goods work and what causes prices to go up and what potentially causes inflation. But then when we get a larger supply and now the supplier has 1,000 widgets and nobody's been buying their widgets and they're trying to sell it to the retailer, they're like, hey, look, my supply expanded. I now have Venezuela widgets. I have 1,000 of them. And like, hey, anybody want to buy my widgets? And everybody's like, I already have my 12. I don't need any more. Okay, I'll give you a discount. I'll give them to you for 80 cents each.
Oh.
Like, maybe I'll stock up a few. Maybe I'll buy 10 more. And so now the retailer has their 10 at $1. They have their one at $1.20. And they have 10 more at 80 cents. And so now their average cost has gone to like 90 cents. You know, because
right.
They have the $1 ones and the 80 cent ones. And so now we dollar cost average and it's about 90 cents for all of them. So when you think of business and you think of a business model and how the supply chain works and it goes from, you know, wholesaler, supplier to retailer, and then each time it goes to a different price point. And when they have an overabundance of supply, and nobody, they have too much supply and not enough people buying it, they have to lower their costs. So we go through this, but we also go through this in financial markets. So when there's a stock and it's high demand and everybody wants the stock and it's brand new, like SpaceX is supposed to be coming out with an IPO, which means that SpaceX is releasing a brand new stock for SpaceX. They didn't have one before. And an IPO means the first offering that they're doing on the stock. And you have to have a certain qualification to buy an IPO, like to buy the first stock. But when it goes to market, then you can buy it after the initial offering has come out. So its initial public offering is an IPO. So it's a brand new stock that came out. A certain pool gets into it first. And then once you have to qualify to be that first pool to get into it, you get it at the discounted, like the lower rate. And then when it gets sold on the open market, then the price goes up. And so you can buy it on the open market. Like if there's a high demand, so SpaceX will have a high demand for their stock and the price will go up because everybody's trying to get in on it. So that's a high demand. And then they have a allocated amount of supply. So only so many can be sold at. And so the price goes up. So it's the same thing. Like a widget, you have everybody, if everybody wants that widget and there's only 10 widgets, then the price is going to go up. If there's 1,000 widgets and only 10 people, then the price will go down. So it's the same thing. It works with business models. It works with widgets. It works with goods and services. It works with interest rates. It works with stocks. And then it also works with tokens. So like when we built out a lot of our technology, crypto is the fastest moving industry, and it's the best place to start some type of new technology in AI technology and crypto, because you can get fast, immediate results and fast responses. And so like in a meme coin, which are a lot of our bots started on finding the algo and what makes a good investment, and then finding outliers and the different indicators and variables, and then predicting which ones are the best ones, and then applying it to other financial markets and other assets. We started out with meme coins, and meme coins is the same thing. You have 1 million that goes to market, and if you have 1,000 people trying to buy it at once, it has a lot of volume, it has a limited amount of supply, high demand, everyone's trying to buy at the same time, causes the price to go up right away. So it spikes right away.
Right.
And then everyone's trying to buy as fast as they can because it's new, brand new. So usually the price peaks at the first hour to 2 hours because demand's high, volume's high, limited supply, and everybody's trying to buy it. And then it goes up like at its all-time high, close to that 24 hours. And then as people start to take profit and sell off, the attention wears off a little bit, and then the price fluctuates. So it has right. that spike in demand, spike in volume, limited supply, just like any other business model, the same thing, but it happens faster because everything happens faster in crypto with technology and AI and stuff. So we've applied like all of our models in that because it moves fast, and if you're trying to get into a learning curve and figure out something, the speed is the best way to do it.
Right.
And so we've done that in meme coins, but then I've also put it into predictive markets, put it into assets, stocks, bonds, you know, options, IPOs, gold. I've been trading gold a lot lately too. Gold's been moving a lot more fluctuations than it was in the past. It was a little bit more steady and it had little movement, and now it's ranging even higher. So it has a bigger movement in gold. Housing market, when there's a big demand for housing and everybody wants houses and it's spring and interest rates are down and they're trying to move and the supply is only like 10 houses in that city and you have 100 people trying to buy, you're going to get multiple offers. The price is going to go up because the demand is high, the supply is low, and it causes the price to go up. So everything happens with basically volume, supply, and demand. So it gives you a price on if it's goods and services, if it's an asset, if it's gold, stocks, bonds, options, futures, if it's crypto, if it's oil, you know, anything that has those three factors in. Xboxes at Christmas, or, you know, the next big game as soon as it has a release.
Yep.
If you have those three factors, that's what's going to cause movement. So again, volume, supply, and demand is going to cause something. So if you ever want something to go up in price, if you're trying to sell a house or you're trying to sell a watch or a car or anything else, you want something that has a low supply, a high demand, and lots of volume, lots of activity in that certain asset.
Right.
So
right.
If you're trying to sell, what's a car that everybody has? It's like a generic car out there, Kia or Prius.
Yeah, Prius.
So it's
That's a very
like a
generic
cookie
one.
cutter car that everybody has, right? You
Yep.
can probably find thousands of them if you went on to online or went to a dealership. There's thousands of them. So they're all going to be pretty much close to the same price because there's not necessarily a high demand. There's like a lot of supply, and the volume is just, whatever volume is for that.
Yeah.
But now if you have a rare Ferrari or a Lamborghini,
Oh.
and then you have a high demand because everybody wants that particular one, you have a low supply because there's limited edition, there's not that many of them, the price is going to go up.
Yeah, and
So.
cars is a great example for me. I see there's especially in the car market, there's a lot of we'll call them limited cars or cars of higher value where people are they bid on these cars, right? If you've been in the car market or been in a housing market or any kind of market, you see people bidding on stuff, right? They look for the best entry and they
Yes.
bid higher and higher and higher, and that drives the price.
Because they
That's
want it,
their
so they're going to bid higher so they get it.
exactly. It's a representation of the demand, right?
Yes. So, do you have an example of a car? We've
Oh,
been talking. So,
I
we did
can
the
name a
thing.
bunch.
Well, okay, so we'll do this really quick, though. We were talking about Jeeps, right? So, it became awareness about Jeeps, and Jeeps had its highest sales in December and January, and we started talking about it in November. And then we started talking about matcha the last couple of years, and now matcha is everywhere. So it has a high demand for matcha. Now matcha is everywhere. And then
Exactly.
recently we started talking about Porsches, and I've been seeing Porsches at the most
Everywhere.
odd places that I would not think I would see a Porsche. Okay, so tell me a couple of cars that
Oh,
you.
I was going to say the Jeep one, because when we started talking about it, the demand rose, and that was pretty evident, because they had their highest sales or their second highest sales in November, but at the time it was their highest sales in November, followed by consecutive new highest sales in December. So we saw the demand from Jeeps sitting at a flat line, to where people were bidding on the Jeeps as much as they could and buying as many Jeeps as they can, because it was a popular car. It became the hot car that everybody wanted. And that continued to follow. And the Jeeps had less and less supply, and they couldn't keep up with the demand. So the prices on the Jeeps rose, especially in the secondary market. I have to pull up those numbers, but the Jeep prices on the secondary market became higher and higher because more and more people were buying them off of these online websites and from the dealers. So they didn't have a supply to keep up with that increasing demand. So that's the key example, and the one that I think we drove, quite literally drove.
Right, and they said that the last time they had sales that high was in 2021. It's been over 4 or 5 years since they had that high of sales,
We must have been talking
which
about
is,
Jeeps in
we
2021 without
start,
us even knowing
well, the,
it.
so, yeah, so we started talking about it in November, but we weren't trying to push it or advertise it at all. Like, that wasn't my agenda. Jeep didn't sponsor us. I was just
Nope.
trying to show you guys an analogy of like whatever you think of, you're going to become aware of because it's in your prefrontal cortex. And so, like, you're thinking about it. So it becomes like in your subconscious and you become aware of it. And I said, just think of a Jeep or a blue Jeep. And then I started seeing Jeeps everywhere and blue Jeeps everywhere. And like, I'm like, try to cut it off and not think about them anymore. And they're still there. Like, that like a Jeep will probably like drive by my patio right now or something, but I'm like, no, like, where
That
did you come from?
would be
Yeah, it said I'll like see a Porsche going down the river or something, it's like on a ferry going by,
very odd. Manifesting it. It's gonna happen now.
right. So I know we've talked about a lot about supply and demand, so. So back to why we're hoping the interest rates will be cut potentially in May. I like to educate people, so I'm like, that's not going to go. This is what I think is going to happen. Well, there's all these things, all these factors that are built in of why something does what it does. And that's just part of why something does what it does, right? So
Right.
we build out predictive modeling, and we build out predictive modeling based on like a lot of different assets about the world, what's going to happen, geopolitics, about what what's going to happen with like government shutdowns and the Fed and interest rates and ETH prices and the stock market. We do predictive modelings on everything so that we can predict, but those are just some of the inputs that are get put into it. And then we also look at time frames. So then you consider time value money. So time value money is the closer you get to a date, the what's the word for it? The less cost it has, the closer you get to the date. The farther away from you are from the date, the more time you have to predict your model. So
right.
Say I wanted to predict what the stock price of SpaceX is going to be in a year. And I buy an option a year out. This gives me a whole year for it to hit its target price.
Right.
So say, I don't know what they're going to release it. I didn't investigate it enough on what they think the IPO price is going to be on the launch. So say they launch it at $100 a share.
Right.
And I predict in a year it'll hit $200. Well, it has a whole entire year to hit $200 before it hits my target price. Now, if it released today at 100 and my buy-in was tomorrow it had to hit 200, that's the likelihood of that hitting 200 by tomorrow. I mean, it could potentially because it's SpaceX. It may double in price. Yeah. But for me to have a whole year, I'm buying time for it to hit that 200 price target. So it costs me more money to buy that time. So that's where time value money comes into play. Same thing if I'm going to buy somebody's house. So say the market is hot. This is on fire and everybody wants houses and they're all trying to do a demand for a house. And there's one house in the market that I've wanted forever and it's been there and it just got listed, but 100 other people want it too. And I'm going to give them an option to buy it in the future. And the market's hot and I know it's going to keep going up. And so my price, I say like in a year, I'll give you the same price as today. They're like, no way, because we know in the year, it probably will appreciate if the market's hot.
Right.
So you have to put in a premium of what the market will anticipate being a year out. So if it's a hot, hot, hot market and I'm buying now and I'm getting it for today's cost, I'm getting a smoking deal because I'm going to buy it a year in the future at the discounted price today. But if the market's going down and I buy it for today's price or at a higher price in the future, I'm going to lose money because, again, time value money. So when something's hot, something's in demand, and you buy more time to hit your price target, you're going to pay a premium for it. The closer you are to the date, the cheaper the price gets because you're losing time, and so it's going to take, it's you have to make your price target quicker. So when we do prediction markets, it's the same thing. Like if we're predicting out that ETH will hit an all-time high this year, we have that whole entire year for a hit to hit the all-time high. If we think it's going to hit an all-time high tomorrow, it's going to have to double in price like two times tomorrow plus like some change and hit its price target by tomorrow. But if we have a year for it to hit it, we have time on our side, so that adds value and money. We have to pay a premium for that.
Right.
So the same thing happens in predictions. You take in all these different factors on what you think is going to become the outcome. So if we think that, okay, so the cost of fuel will go up, then the supply will increase, and then the cost of fuel will go down. And then hypothetically, if they cut interest rates because they don't want high unemployment, so they need to encourage people to buy jobs. And we have a new Fed coming in, so that will cause a rally in the market. And then potentially if the war ends and then we have lower cost on fuel because we have a bigger supply. And then we've had CPI is still low because they release stable coins. Stable coins are buying up the treasuries. When they buy up the treasuries, it reduces debt. And then the banks are making money because they're getting interest on the state, on the treasury bills. And when they're getting interest on that, they can lend out more money. So then their cost is down. And you considered all these different factors. And if all these factors fall in place, that would predict that there would be a rally in the market. Now, if there's an outlier, a wild card, we call it, one thing that we didn't take into consideration, and whenever you do predictions or you ever do anything that you're saying based on this, this, and this, if everything falls in place and this should happen, if A, B, C, D, E, F, and G happen, then H will predict the outcome. But if you have A, B, C, D, and then E is a wild card and something happened that you weren't anticipating, but you still have F and G, then that wild card will change the outcome.
Right.
So like, these are the things that are backing up a potential for a rally in the market. Now, if there's an announcement that everything is resolved, there's an announcement that we have an oil supply, there's an announcement that we have possession of the strait, there's an announcement that they're going to cut rates, there's an announcement that inflation is down. Let's see what else. Inflation down, unemployment's up a little, would cause a rally in the market.
Yep.
All these different factors will cause a rally in the market. And so if you're buying time value money, you would do an option long in the future that you're only risking the option money. You're not doing a perp where you have to cover if the market fluctuates. Again, do your own research, not financial advice. I know this is a heavy segment. We're talking about all these different things, but this is how we predict markets. And this is how we predict outcomes of anything. And this is how we predict our own lives too, right? We find the best system and strategy, the best opportunity. This is what insurance companies do on risk for drivers. This is what home mortgages do for risk of borrowers. This is, you know, dentist, if they're going to fix a tooth or not, or if they're going to pull a tooth, if medical, if they find a heart condition, if they change the diet and increase exercise and give them medication, the outcome is going to be better. So everything that we do in life basically is kind of a prediction, because we take in as much information as we can, as much data as we can, and we make the best choice for ourselves or for whoever we're with, right?
Right.
Or whoever is. And so that's basically what we do, is we're data nerds. We gather as much data. The cleaner the data, the better, because whatever you input is going to be what your output. Now, if I'm collecting data, and I just told you guys key things of what would cause a rally in the market.
Right.
If I'm collecting data and I'm using that, if the temperature is 80 degrees tomorrow, that means the market's going to rally. That's not good data. I mean, it could. I mean, the market could rally and I could say, oh, because the temperature was 80 tomorrow, that made the market rally. But
right.
That's not an actual cause and effect of piece of data that you input that would make the market rally. You have to have something that actually has a cause and effect. So there's people out there inputting stuff into OpenAI models and ChatGPT and Gemini, and they're like, playing around with it and saying, if let's see, if I eat dessert tonight, does that mean that Arizona is going to win the Final Four, you know, or March Madness? So like there's four left in the Final Four, and there's an outlier, which is Connecticut, and they didn't anticipate Connecticut was going to win. And I think they won by like 1 point. Now they're in the Final Four. So that's the outlier. But if I eat dessert tonight, does that mean that Connecticut's going to win? No. But if you like input the stats for Connecticut and what the ball players are doing, then you would anticipate what you can predict on it. So I know we've been talking about a lot of stuff tonight. You're like, thank you for the economic lesson, and we just got our MBA tonight on predictive modeling and business models. But this is the reason why we're saying go.
You're all economists now.
right. I know, it wasn't as exciting. Last couple of weeks, we talked about like going out and playing and having fun and being a kid again and eating warm milk and cookies and spending time with your family and friends. And this week, we're like, this is what happens when you do predictive modeling.
You've had your break.
But
here's
the
data.
The interesting thing is we've been talking about like you can apply this to everything in your life. And most people do this every day to day. When you're making a decision, you're compiling the facts on what you think is going to happen, and you're making your decisions based on that. Like, should I move across the country? Should I travel? Should I buy a car? You're coming up with reasons why you think you should or should not do something. And you're basically doing predictive modeling in your own life every single day on the decisions that you're making. But we're just doing it at a hyper extensive model at 1,000 exponentially, taking in all the data and then predicting out. And there's, like, we were talking, well, you can do this with your life. A gentleman in China, he's 20 years old, built out a thing called Microfish where it predicts outcomes of your life. And that's what we were talking about doing. And now he's built it out. And anybody can do this. You just take in all the factors on a decision that you're trying to make, compile as much data as you can and the reasons why or why not, and then predict out what you think the outcome will be in your best and highest good outcome, right? So you can do this in everything in your life. Like, should I start working out today? Should I start eating healthy? Well, these are the pros if I start eating healthy. These are the cons if I don't. This is what will happen to me in 1 month if I do. This is what will happen to me in 3 months if I don't. So it's the same thing. So remember, key factors that we could cause a rally, that could cause a rally. And then there's always that outlier wild card. But we have, if interest rates get cut, new Fed chair coming in, if CPI comes out low, lower inflation, stable coins are buying up U.S. treasuries, which is covering debt. We have now we're going to have more businesses having production of goods and services that they had to replace. If we take possession of the strait, if we have possession of more oil, if the war ends, all these things will cause rallies in the market. When people don't have the answers to this, it causes uncertainty and we see range trading. And if you're on the side of like optimism and you see things fall in place, then we have that market rally. When there's uncertainty, we have range trading. So in the interim, while we're waiting, we're going to range until we get answers. And then we input the model and the model says, yay, it's a go. And then the market rallies. But all these things are happening in May and June, up to May and June. So we're like coming on April 1st. Tomorrow's April Fool's Day for all the people around the world. But it's April Fool's tomorrow, not today. So this isn't an April Fool's show. but like all these factors build into why financial markets and housing and cost of goods and services, you know, have a cause and effect. And if you understand that and you look back and see the whole picture, instead of just focusing on one thing, you see how everything affects the other thing. So if this was too overwhelming, we'll have a fun show the next time, you know, but still, again, go spend time with your family and friends. I'm optimistic still on all the financial markets, long-term hold, 30 years. Everything always makes a gain in the stock market. Everything else, if you look back historically, 30 years out, if you're saving for retirement, you're optimistic in the future. Short-term range trading is awesome. You can range trade because it's predictable right now and uncertainty. So you can buy bottom, sell top, not the reverse. you can go have fun, go spend some time outdoors, touch grass, touch water, go spend time with your family and friends, have a blast, have fun, go eat some warm milk and cookies, go do a puzzle, take a relief from your brain, have fun, go to the gym, get some cardio and exercise, breathe some fresh air, have a matcha.
Ooh,
or
Thai
tea.
Or Thai tea.
Yes. Or Taco Tuesday. I consumed it all with this economic history of life, but we will have fun in the future and go ETH.
Go ETH. It's excitement. Woo. Go ETH.
Woo. And don't forget to woo. Okay. See y'all next Tuesday.
See everyone.
Bye,
have
y'all.
A great rest of your week.
You're listening to Tech Trend Investments with Elizabeth Powell and Joseph Grassa, only on LA Talk Radio.